Welcome back to The Wise Man's Page, the podcast where we read Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear, page by page. This is page 270. Of luck, and partly at the thought of a young girl brave enough to defy the Chandrian, but still terrified of making her mother angry. Such is the way of the world. Nina, you've done me a wonderful favor. If you ever need anything, or if you have another dream, you can find me at an inn called Anchors. I play music there. Her eyes went wide. Is it magic music? I laughed again. Some people think so. She looked around nervously. I really have to go, she said, then waved and took off running towards the river, the wind blowing her hood back as she went. I carefully re-rolled the piece of paper and tucked it back into the hollow piece of horn. My mind spun with what I had just learned. I thought of what I'd heard Haliak say to Cinder all those years ago. Who keeps you safe from the Emir, the singers, the Sitha? After my months of searching, I was fairly certain the archives held nothing more than fairy stories about the Chandrian. Nobody considered them more real than shamblemen or fairies. But everyone knew about the Emir. They were the bright knights of the Aturan Empire. They were the strong hand of the church for 200 years. They were the subject of 100 stories and songs. I knew my history. The Emir had been founded by the Telan Church in the early days of the Aturan Empire. But the pottery Nina had seen had been much older than that. I knew my history. The Emir had been condemned and disbanded by the church before the empire fell. But I knew the Chandrian were still afraid of them today. It seemed like there was more to the story. And that's the page.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jordana.
I'm Jeremy. So I would like to start off with something that I meant to mention last page, but in all the hubbub, it got left behind. I really love the phrase, my mom's going to give me a birching, because obviously she's going to make a switch out of a birch tree and whip me with it.
Oh, I didn't connect those dots, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and it ties into the top of this page, right? That, you know, Nina is brave enough to potentially defy the supernatural monsters that, like, slaughtered a whole wedding party in her town, but she's not brave enough to defy her mom, which makes sense to me because, you know, despite their respective quote-unquote power levels, her mom is the much more clear and present threat. Like, she sees her mom every day.
Well, not only is her mom a clearer and more present threat, but she's also someone that Nina cares about deeply on an emotional level, which to me would just make them more important, whether it's a good important or a bad important.
Well, she's less abstract, right? The Chandrian are kind of like an abstract, faraway threat, whereas her mom is like a real presence in her life.
I think also it's not just that she's worried that her mom will give her a birching, but she also doesn't want to disappoint her mom because she loves her because she's her mom.
This is true. I just want to point out, Jeremy, that while to most people the Chandrian are barely a clear and present danger, I think it's pretty much accepted that they did the murder. Like,
yeah, but they're like not around all the time, like killing people. Like, it happened one time, and Nina wasn't there. It's like me being more afraid of my mom than I am of ISIS. Does ISIS exist? Do they kill people? Sure, but am I in immediate danger from them in the day to day? No.
I mean, if you're doing COINTELPRO with their enemies, then you might be.
But I'm not.
But Nina is.
But they don't know that.
Only because Nina stumbled upon the names of angels and put them in her artwork.
Nick, even if I was doing, like, spy stuff to stop ISIS, I would still be less afraid of them than, you know, my boss, because ISIS is a continent away. They're on the other side of the ocean.
But what if they can appear out of the sky like a bolt of lightning?
Well, let them do it then. They haven't done it yet.
I mean, we've seen the Chandrian, which are, of course, the ISIS of this universe, do it, so...
I feel like, at some point, that might not age well.
It's already not aged well.
It's fantastically, like...
I'm pretty sure
like
we don't even call them ISIS anymore.
ISIL, ISIS, whatever.
Yeah. You might as well say the Kremlin.
Actually, I have notes. I'm just going to interrupt you.
Fine.
So I said that, but really I just wanted a turn to talk. So at the end of the page, the writing style is interesting because he says, I knew my history. The Emir had been blah, 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 blah. And then I knew my history. The Emir had been a blah, 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 blah. Like he starts the sentence the same way. He starts the paragraph the same way. And the first two sentences the same way. Like it's exactly the same up until.
This is kind of how it feels when your mind is racing, right?
I think what Jordan is getting at is that Rothfuss is using a rhetorical device of presenting us with a statement and then in the next line providing a countervailing evidence to that statement, right? The Emir had been founded by the Telan Church, but the pottery Nina had seen was way older than that. So they weren't founded by the Telan Church. That's obviously false. And the history says the Emir were condemned and disbanded, but the Chandrian are still afraid of them. So he's not only is the sentence construction the same, but like rhetorically speaking, he is setting up a statement and then disproving it, which is a really effective rhetorical tool.
Feels like you could add to that list really easily.
Probably could. I think the point has been stricken home. And also, this is a great turning point in the story because Quoth can now start chasing the Emir. Until now, he's been looking for information on the Chandrian, but now he switches and he starts looking for information on the Emir, which is why I think he ends up going to Severin.
I believe you. And his reasoning for doing that makes sense, right? Because there isn't very much information on the Chandrian that's useful because no one apart from him believes they're real. Whereas, because even if the historical facts about the Emir are not correct, they like everyone knows the Emir existed and like has some kind of history about them. So there's way more information for him to sift through that might be helpful.
Jordana, this is the end of something.
Yes, I have my final note if you two are quite finished.
I am quite finished.
Lovely. This is the end of a chapter, and this chapter was called Secrets. The kind that you keep, I assume, or tell?
I guess so. I mean, I guess it's a secret that Quoth and Nina, like the Quoth gave Nina the thing, and it's a secret what Jimmy showed her at the Mouthen Farm before it was destroyed.
And she's trying to keep the whole thing secret from her mom.
And the existence of the Emir is still secret to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yep, lots of secrets.
And that's now what Quoth's going after. Yep, secrets upon secrets.
We love a good secret, don't we, folks?
We have multiple letters today because this one is only one line long, but it bears mentioning. It's from SNC. Fella is the one who is Modigan, not Mola. So Nick is correct. Thanks for the podcast. Hope you're all doing well during this difficult time. Signed, SNC. So in your face.
No one likes a, I don't know, whatever you're doing. Whatever you're doing about being right. A know-it-all? No one likes a know-it-all?
Then why do you like Quoth?
Yeah, oh! Exactly. Some of us do like a know-it-all.
Who said I like Quoth?
This next letter, an actual letter, is from Philippe, who writes, why doesn't Mola recognize Auri? Hello, awesome trio. How are you doing? I hope this letter finds you well. First, I love the theory that the person inquiring about Quoth's blood to Devi isn't Ambrose, and is the same person that presumably breaks into Devi's at the end of the book. Second, I would like to point out that, during the heist sequence, Fella and Mola state it is extremely likely that all women in the university know each other. However, in the first book, when Quoth takes Mola to see after Auri's wounds, she doesn't recognize her. I know this evidence is flimsy, but it is another point in the board for the theories that Auri is not a student, but a member of the Fae that is hiding under the university. Quoth's tragic flaw leads him to presume her to be a crack student, and her gifts to be nothing more than token. But she may be something else, and her gifts much more valuable. And in his ignorance, he may endanger her. Thanks again for the podcast. Best regards, Philippe.
Why can't both be true?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if we acknowledge the time passes differently in the Fae, then isn't it possible that Auri was a student at the university like 20 years ago and somehow got herself stuck in the Fae for what to her was only a few days or maybe a month, but in the real world, like a decade went by.
And then when she got back to the real world, she was a bit cracked.
Yeah, that's like a classic element in traditional fairy stories. Like you go to fairyland for a night and you come back and it's 100 years later and everyone you know is dead. And then you crumble into dust because you're also 100 years old and you age that much. That would be a big if true for me, because if that is the case, then there is like world building stuff in the text to support it.
I like it.
And to answer your other question, Philippe, I'm good. Pretty good. Doing well. Got a nice, good new job that I'm doing pretty well at. I like a lot. It's a good crew.
And listeners, you'll be doing good too on tomorrow's page
of
the